Welcome to Hope for Today, a weekly Bible teaching program that will bring you hope for every day. Thank you for joining us on today's program. The Bible is such a practical book, and I love how the wisdom in its pages can be applied to every situation we face. This lesson will be dealing with some specifics of group giving. If you remember, the last two lessons were about other aspects of giving. The first one was the heart behind our giving. What is your motivation? The second lesson gave us three ways we can give well. If you missed them, or if you want to listen to them again, please go to our website, heraldsofhope.org. On the Listen tab, you will be able to find all our recent teaching. Today's lesson won't seem quite as personal because J. Mark will teach on guidelines for group giving. It is personal in that we want each of you to think about it and hopefully apply it in your church, but it is something you will have to work out with other believers. It is not a thing you can do all by yourself. Our passage is the last part of 2 Corinthians 8. Turn there if you can, and we will give our attention to J. Mark as he teaches us the directives for group giving.
The Bible is a treasure trove of profound wisdom. It serves us as a practical guide for leading a fulfilling life. Its teachings cover a wide range of subjects, and it offers principles that can be universally applied to the various situations that we find in life. The Bible enlightens us, and it guides us. Let me give you an example of this guidance. While the Bible may not explicitly forbid playing the lottery, its wisdom is clear. Proverbs 13:11 cautions us this way: "Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it." And then 1 Timothy 6:9 warns us, "Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition." These verses, although they don't specifically say it, they guide us on the issue of things like playing the lottery. Over the past few weeks, we've been exploring the topic of giving. In Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, chapter 8, he gives details of a gift being collected by the believers in Asia Minor for the church in Jerusalem. These verses also provide practical guidelines on how you and I can manage a gift of this type. They offer important insights as we strive to be good stewards of what God has entrusted to our care. I believe these verses apply especially to the recipients of financial gifts, places like churches, evangelistic ministries and missionaries, Christian schools, and other parachurch organizations. So I've titled our study, Guidelines for Group Giving, and our text is 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verses 16 to 24. Listen as I read the Holy Scripture. "But thanks be to God, who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus. For he not only accepted the exhortation, but being more diligent, he went to you on his own accord. And we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. And not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us and with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord himself and to show your ready mind. Avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered by us, providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent because of the great confidence which we have in you. If anyone inquires about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. Or if our brethren are inquired about, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. Therefore show to them, and before the churches, the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf." This text gives us several necessary directives to help us use best practices when we give as a group. The first directive is engage trusted stewards. When Titus heard from Paul about the needs of the church in Jerusalem, he immediately set out to visit the Corinthians and to remind them of that need. The last chapter of Paul's first letter to the Corinthians informed them of the need, but they hadn't done anything about it yet. Because of his zeal, Titus decided to go to Corinth to collect the gift. And then Titus was accompanied by another brother who was also well known among the churches. Now, we don't know who that person was. Paul doesn't say. Perhaps it was Luke. In verse 22, we also discover that another faithful brother has been added to this team. I believe this is a crucial principle. Administration of a gift like this needs to engage trusted stewards. Having multiple people responsible for the gift is a safety mechanism that protects everyone who is involved. Take a moment to look at the words that Paul uses to describe the men on this team. Earnest, willing, approved by the churches, gifted administrators, diligent, cooperative, and Christ-honoring. Character really does matter. Those seem to me like men who would quickly gain my confidence. I would call them trusted stewards. Let's also think about some of the words that Paul didn't use to describe them. Words like thrifty, polished, business-minded, or focused on the bottom line. Do you see the difference? Now, these don't necessarily need to be mutually exclusive, but they often tend to be so. Now, except for Titus, these men were not chosen by Paul. The churches selected them. The churches, which had a vested interest in this process. They chose men who had proven their integrity and could be trusted to handle a gift of this size. You know, I'm amazed at people's confidence in those they don't know. They forget that money has a corrupting influence. Paul has no reservations about the character of these messengers, these stewards. These men were sent by the churches, and they were responsible for the proper accounting of the funds involved in this project. And they were committed to doing it for the glory of God. We read that in verse 23. What an excellent example for you and me to follow. The next directive, then, that will help us use best practices in group giving is avoid the appearance of impropriety. And you know, this is so important in our day. Paul had requested the gift for the Jerusalem church, but he had nothing to do with the administration of it. No one could accuse him of favoritism, of mismanagement, or lining his own pockets. This is a good pattern for us to follow. Pastors shouldn't have anything to do with managing finances in their congregations. Let me say that again. Pastors shouldn't have anything to do with managing finances in their congregations. That's the work of deacons or elders. When I see a pastor who handles the church finances, immediately there are warning flags that come into my mind. One reason for having multiple people involved in a giving project like this is to avoid the appearance of impropriety, the appearance of wrongdoing. This isn't a matter of not trusting the people, but of protecting them from accusations that they're unfaithful. If you're given responsibility for a project like this, you should immediately insist that others be appointed to help you. They may catch some innocent mistake that you make and spare you from accusations of mismanagement or even the loss of your reputation. I know of a situation where a church treasurer had almost exclusive control of the church finances. And when someone raised questions about the status of the funds and the suggestion was made to have an audit of the finances, he became upset and defensive. He accused the questioners of not trusting him. Well, as you can imagine, his defensiveness only aroused greater suspicion, and I have to tell you that situation ended poorly. Oversight of finances is never threatening when someone is honest. In a situation like this, you and I need to avoid the appearance of impropriety at all costs. And then there's a final directive that will help us use best practices in group giving. It is encourage generosity. The men who were authorized to carry this gift to Jerusalem were also charged with soliciting in churches along the way. And according to verse 24, they were to be welcomed by the local congregation and allowed to share the need. I know from experience that some churches are very jealous of their finances. But Paul was encouraging the churches of Asia Minor to share generously with their needy brothers and sisters in Jerusalem. In the group of churches I'm part of, we have a procedure for helping individual congregations when they have financial needs that are bigger than they can handle. It involves several steps of vetting and accountability. When those requirements are met, then the need is sent out to all the pastors and deacons who are part of this larger group of churches. Some give out of their church benevolence fund, or maybe they take a special offering for the need. Others choose not to participate at all. But our people are encouraged to be generous. And then finally, a report of how the need was met is submitted by the local church where the need originated. Many of us know what it's like to have significant medical bills, or the losses caused by a fire, or maybe some other financial burden. What a blessing it is to have the church, the body of Christ, come alongside and help lift and carry that burden. You know, after you experience something like that, you know what it feels like, and it makes you more willing to share in the needs of others. As Paul stated in the earlier verses of this chapter, the circumstances could easily be reversed, and the ones in need now become the givers. In the last verse of this chapter, Paul writes, "Therefore, show to them and before the churches the proof of your love and our boasting on your behalf." The word picture Paul creates is of a great host watching how the Corinthians will receive and respond to these trusted stewards who were chosen by the churches to oversee the collection and the distribution of this gift. Generosity begets generosity. You see what Paul's doing? He's using positive peer pressure to motivate generous participation. As I said at the beginning, the directives in this text apply beyond the church, especially to Christian nonprofits. But please be aware that the definition of Christian varies widely. Do you know how the charities you support are using their finances? You should, and that information should be readily available to you when you ask for it. A healthy organization will be eager to answer your questions and provide additional information. Has the organization been a trusted steward of the money that's donated by others? Do they have a track record of being trustworthy? Do they avoid the appearance of impropriety? What is the lifestyle of the administration and the staff? And what does their headquarters look like? You know, those are all valid questions and concerns. Once you have answered those questions to your satisfaction and you believe in the organization's mission, then be generous. Because remember, generosity begets generosity. May God bless you as you understand and apply these directives to your group giving.
Thanks, J. Mark, for giving us these three directives to consider in our group giving. This was the third lesson on giving. Next week is the fourth lesson and our final lesson on giving, titled The Graces of Giving. If you have any questions about today's teaching, please feel free to contact us. The best way to reach us is via email, and our email is hope@heraldsofhope.org, or you can write to us. Our address is Hope for Today, Box 3, Breezewood, PA 15533. As I mentioned before, our website is heraldsofhope.org. There, you can reach out to us via the Connect tab. We would love to hear from you, so please contact us however it is easiest for you. Thanks again for joining us, and we encourage you to join us next week for the last lesson in this series on giving. Till then, may we be faithful and do our best to be cheerful givers.